This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. I thank our audience out there. It's funny, I even in my own brain, I'm like, I got to get in my radio voice when I get started with this. But it's fun to be out on the airwaves talking to everybody and kind of getting you guys introduced to some new technology, some new brands, some new people out there that either I've had the privilege of talking to or have not. Today is one of those people that I just met this morning, other than some emails back and forth. Today we are going to be talking with Robert Maynard. Robert, how's it going today?
I am fantastic, Jeremy. Thanks for asking me.
So why don't you give our audience a little bit of an understanding of who Robert is first, and then we'll talk a little bit about what you get to do professionally on a day-in and day-out basis.
Well, that's an interesting question, what I do, right? So, you know, at the end of the day, I would use the word probably serial entrepreneur. Started, a couple of brands, developed real estate, been in banking, another conversation, been in the music business. And really where their focus has been, at least recently, is more on the taking what we've already started, companies like Famous Toastery, Better Breakfast brand, and then multiple different types of brands, whether they be in restaurants, whether they be in service brands, kids, expanding those, giving them the right amount of capital to grow, and take them to the next level. You know, it's everybody has their passions. My passion is watching something grow.
I love it.
Restaurants, whether it be, you know, service brand, whatever, that you can empower folks to do stuff, to make some money and do things they didn't expect to do. You kind of feel very blessed and humble to be able to do that. From my background with, you know, college, you know, didn't go, you know, obviously didn't go to school, you know, I got to work in banking and sitting on a trading desk at JP Morgan. With the day I quit, they asked me, you know, so where did you get your MBA? And I said, well, not only did I not get my MBA, I didn't even go to college. And like the 10 people under me all had an MBA. So that was, So to be able to take those types of things and then bring them to the next, you know, to where you're truly passionate about. Cause you know, you got the name of the company, you know, that we started is One Life, spelled WON. And the truth is you only have one life. This is it. Tomorrow didn't happen. Yesterday already happened. And you and I talking is life. This is it. Embrace it or not. Right. So that's the choice. Wish I would have learned it when I was like, you know, 21 years old, but kind of got there. And I kind of want to be able to share that with as many folks I can.
I love it. I love it. I love that philosophy. It's always fun when I get to meet like-minded people that love to see stuff grow. It's part of my passion. And if I were to turn my video camera around and everybody's listening to us on audio, I got a whole bookshelf full of books that have really influenced my personal growth and passionate about watching businesses grow, passionate about watching people grow. So I love that philosophy because, you know, to your point, at the end of the day, that's really what life is about. It's, you know, it's about those relationships and it's about watching things get better. So you alluded to it in kind of, you know, a portion of what it is that you guys are doing. It sounds like you've got a lot of pokers in the fire, but I know from the restaurant perspective, we're looking to talk about the, you know, the Famous Toastery. You alluded to that brand. For those that aren't familiar with that brand, talk to us a little bit about what it is, what's the service style, kind of where did it come from? Talk to me a little bit about what Famous Toastery is.
Well, cool. So Famous Toastery, we call it it's Better Breakfast. So it's a better breakfast brand, right? It's the daytime only cafe. It actually started in 2005, and I'll get into that whole piece in a second. But we what we're known for and why we're so popular and why we've done so well is we actually make and do everything fresh that day for that day. So our philosophy has always been, you know, no frozen food, obviously no fryers. A lot of folks don't have the fryers, but when we make anything, we make it in-house. So soup, we make in the house. We're going to have potatoes. We'll make it that day for that day. Corned beef hash, turkey, we'll roast our own turkey, nitrate free. And we've had a lot of success with that because one of the things that we learned early on, not because we were super smart, it's just because it's what we knew, is we wanted everything to be made. We really wanted it to be fresh, not to be able to say things like it's fresh, but be able to say, hey, come on in, check out how it's made. You know, we didn't thaw out that that soup. We actually made it in house, and you're eating it today. We don't see that too often these days, and it's something that's really, really helped us propel, and it's what we've doubled down on. And how it all started was my friend Brian Birchall, who's also co-founder with me in Famous Toastery. I met him the day I moved from the Bronx many years ago to Long Island, and obviously we went to school together, became friends, and one day he said, "Would you you want to get in the restaurant business?" Now, he used to run a lot of great restaurants in New York City because that's where I lived, that's where he lived. And I told him he was out of his mind. I said some more choice words, but it was, I'm giving you the PG version. But he knew I was in the deal-making world, and he knew I was in banking and real estate. And he actually sent me a round-trip ticket, a car, and a place to stay. And on the third day, we had a deposit on a existing restaurant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was that, you know, and it was something that was doing, you know, 50 to 100 like people a week, closed on the weekends. It was breakfast place. And we changed the name, did Saturday, Sunday, and we were serving 500 people a month. I mean, 500 people a week out of 1,400 square feet. So we kind of knew we had something special, but I wasn't all that involved. And then fast forward, in 2013, we had three locations, or should I say 2014, we had three locations. That's when I moved to Charlotte, and that's when we started growing.
Love it. So service style, fast casual, you know, casual dining, like talk to me a little bit about, do you walk up to the counter and order, or is it really competing with kind of the Denny's crowd, the IHOP crowd, but clearly better, you know, from the product perspective?
Yeah, it's full service. And, you know, one of the things that we have, which is pretty cool, you know, we have kind of two things. It's famous service, and also every server is your server, which basically means everybody that's standing works for everybody that's sitting. So there's no such thing as, hey, can I get coffee? Can I please have some coffee? And someone says, let me get your server. It doesn't work that way.
Oh, I love that. I love that philosophy.
Everyone's got to work, you know, for the people sitting down. So it's what's really, really set us apart, is it's hard to execute. And when it works well, it is amazing. When it doesn't work well, it's not amazing. That's why training, you know, is just so, so important. And why, you know, also why we've doubled down on training and hiring and stuff like that. But,
yeah, I was going to ask some of those questions about really how have you gotten to a place, because thinking about the complexity of what breakfast looks like, breakfast served fresh on the kitchen side, and then kind of your service model, it sounds like there's a lot there. I don't know, same from a dumbed down perspective, but I think as you grow, you've seen it as a consumer, as the brands grow, they start to dumb down their food, they start to dumb down their service model, they start to dumb down what those things are. Talk to me a little bit about what that looks like, for the last 10 years or whatever, as you guys have been doing this 15 years. Has it been hard to maintain the quality of the food? Has it been hard to maintain the quality of the service model?
Well, the quality of food has never been hard. It's because it's almost like doing something, you know, when you do something completely new, you know, if you've never run a marathon and they go and try to run 29 miles, you're probably going to have a heart attack and fall on the ground.
Uh-huh.
But if you've been running marathons for 20 years and then someone says run a marathon, you'll be fine.
Yep.
So day one, that was like all we knew. The only thing we knew was fresh food, right? And that translated into years of being around. So for us, it's a foregone conclusion to have, you know, really fresh food. And why we're always really surprised when we go to places that don't have it, because I get why people don't do it. I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that. It's just what we've decided to do. But no, that's been easy. What's been hard is the obvious with you have to have some decent folks in the kitchen.
Yeah. Right?
And you got to have people that can listen and execute. You don't need a chef, but you need people that can execute and get in there and follow the system and train the rest, expo, and get the food out. I mean, we get out fresh food in 4 to 6 minute ticket times.
Oh my goodness.
Pretty insane.
That's insane. Especially for that quality of food.
And it's casual dining. That's what we've always been known for. Now, will I say that got a little different from, you know, with COVID, and then let's call it, post COVID excuses. Sure. Mm-hmm. The reality is things are tougher in the labor department. People left the restaurant business, but personally, it's just another excuse not to be great. So in our philosophy is we make our life very easy. We're either, you know, you're in the eagle or the turkey department. There is no in between. Very simple. You're either great or you're not, right?
Mm-hmm.
When it comes to, you know, me, if I'm not going to stay at high level, I got to go, Right?
Yeah.
Period. Like there's no negotiating. The same thing with your food. If your food's not great, it's got to go. If your people running your stores are not great, but that comes from the top down. You can't blame anyone else because you're the one that's in charge of training and giving people these tools to be successful. As long as you can give them all those tools, they should be at a top level.
I love that. So I'm going to ask you to rewind just a little bit. I guess going back to your early days in the restaurant, think about the lessons that you've learned, Robert, as you guys opened up restaurants. You know, it sounds like, you know, you went from one to two and then two to three. And I'm certain that there's been quite a few lessons that you've learned that if you could do it over again, you know, you're clearly extremely successful. You've got a passion to help things grow. But I'm certain that if you were to go back and say, what are one or two learnings that you wish you would have known prior to, since you had very little restaurant experience when you started this and now kind of you and your partner are growing it. And we'll talk about the growth trajectory here in a little bit. What are two or three things or one or two things that you might offer to our audience that you think would be helpful for them to consider as they look to grow their restaurant and or glean from you?
Well, I tell you, we've had a lot of, so from the restaurant side, we did a lot of things right on the restaurant side. It's the franchise side that you forget that you're in two very different businesses.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But even from the restaurant side, it's, you know, you, when you start things mom and pop, you've got to get out of mom and pop very, very quickly because people get used to running it like mom and pop. Let's say you have one location and you have four locations, mom and pop way of thinking. And what I mean by that is how you do your books, your chart of accounts, the training, the follow-up, the kitchen checks, the making sure the kitchen's clean, making sure they're pulling out the oven. The stuff that you've got to have those checklists early on, because a lot of people are like, it's only, you know, this is great. I'm growing. I have three or four locations. This is fun. That's where you start to see that you can start to see things shake because you're used to being a one person show.
Uh-huh.
Now you have four and you've spread yourself too thin. You didn't hire enough people and you need to hire. People need people. People need people for everything. You want to go to the supermarket, you need a person to help you. You need to get some food, someone needs to serve it to you. You want to get gas, someone needs to put that gas in the tank so that you can put it in your tank. So people need people and you need to invest in people. So you never want to, you know, over invest when you have way too many people not doing anything. But getting the right people on the team early, and I'm sure a lot of people will tell you that, you know, to fire fast, but also fail fast. It's okay to screw things up.
Yeah.
Like I'm so happy when I look back, not at the time, of things that, you know, you got messed up, whether it be owning real estate in 2008 or, you know, running a business in that time. You know, it helps your inner way of thinking. Moving forward, the more stuff you mess up or you make a wrong decision on, as long as you put it in your database, right? In your own mental
technology. Learn from it. Yep.
You got to learn from it. It doesn't always mean you're not going to make mistakes, but the thing is you've got to be able to embrace and you got to make decisions quickly. Like a lot of people don't want to make a mistake. So like, well, they'll just, you know, they'll procrastinate. You know, problems don't age well. they are guaranteed to get worse when they're not dealt with. So
that's a fantastic philosophy, by the way. If anybody didn't hear that, just, you know, I'll ask you to repeat that. So problems don't age well.
Yeah, well, problems don't age well. Hiding them or denying them, guarantee they'll get worse.
I love that. I learned that philosophy.
And I learned that from, and I wish I would have said I made that up. I learned that from Jamie Dimon at CEO of JPMorgan Chase, who I got the opportunity to work with many years ago. And it was just a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant guy. And how he was able to run so many things, but more importantly, how he was able to be the head of the biggest bank in the world and then ask everybody for advice.
Yeah.
You know, I was far from somebody at the top of the food chain there, and he wanted to know what I thought. I don't think I gave him much good advice, but it's the thing you're always learning. You're always thinking, right? And he's always trying to solve problems. But the idea is to get, you know, to basically be able to get in front of things and, you know, kind of have these mantras, because that's where a lot of people go wrong. They know there's a problem. They know there's a bad franchisee. They know there's a bad GM. Well, I need the GM because I can't open on Friday, or this franchisee's paying a royalty, so I don't want to get rid of that. If you don't cut off the cancer or the bad stuff, you know, there's no one has ever said, I survived cancer and it was a great experience.
Yeah. Right? Or nobody's ever said, hey, I fired somebody too fast. Like right. That's a saying that somebody said to me actually earlier this week. I was in something. Yeah, I never regret the fire that I made too late. And I'm like, ooh, you know, there's somebody, you know, to your point, that person that I've cut out of my life that was cancerous or a franchisee that's bad or a bad menu item, you know, for that matter. It's amazing to think that way. And as I look back, most of my mistakes are because I didn't want to deal with it or didn't choose to deal with it.
Yeah. And you can, it's all different because we all got it. We're all programmed, right? We all see the world through our own personal lens, mm-hmm. whether it's how you were treated when you were 5 years old or how you were treated or how you experienced high school, whatever. And no one's going to know that by looking at anybody, but you in the beginning, it's almost like a muscle. You got to be prepared to make the decision because decisions are being made every second of every day, mm-hmm. and they're going to be made for you. So if you know you have a problem and you don't deal with it, you may not make the decision. The decision gets made for you, and it's never in your favor.
Yeah. So, no, absolutely.
And it's also responsibility because, you know, even when you're saying with, you know, a bad worker or a bad franchisee, you know, you can never sit back and say, well, they were just a bad franchisee. Because at the end of the day, the franchisor signed that document. The franchisor took their money, trained them, whatever it may be. And it is the franchisor's responsibility to figure that piece out.
Yeah.
I've been through that. So, but you also have to take responsibility for what happens. Because once you start making everybody else, you blaming everything on everybody else, then that means your power is outside of you anyway. That's just life in general. Mm-hmm. But how do you grow a restaurant brand when it's the government's fault for X? Stop talking about all these things. I mean, forget about, I'm not talking politics on the show.
Yeah,
I'm just saying, you got to move forward. Doesn't matter who's in office. Doesn't matter who's the senator.
Yeah, you got labor problems. You got food cost problems. You got real estate problems. You got to fight through it because if you're not going to, your competitors are going to, and they're going to eat your lunch. Figuratively and literally.
Yeah.
So question for you, Robert, you alluded to the fact that you guys started kind of with your own brand. It sounds like you guys own the majority of the first few restaurants, but you've talked about franchising. Talk to me a little bit about that decision-making process. Why did you guys go down the franchising route? What have you learned as it relates to franchising? How much of what the brand still is corporately owned and owned by you and your partners versus how much of it's spun out to just franchisees, you know, as you look at the whole system that you guys have at this point?
Yeah, so we have 7 corporate stores. The rest are franchised right now. We have, to kind of give you a little bit of background, we stopped franchising several years ago. I kind of look at things differently than a lot of folks do. We grew, I would say our first 17, 18 locations were just absolutely amazing. And then you have that one location that opens and it's not what you expect, or the person does something that you never expected them to do, meaning from a franchise side, or, you know, I don't want to market yet. I'm going to wait to be open for a year, or I need to close Sundays because I need a break. You know, it's the busiest day of the week. Or my husband's going to run this now because, you know, I'm going to do something else. Though the husband's never even stepped foot in training. When you have something that's right and successful, you want people to follow the book. And for me personally, if you're going to go and spend a lot of money to open a location or open something, whatever it may be, I would follow the playbook. Uh-huh. I'm going to go play on the NFL and they're going to tell me, you know, this is the play. And I'm going to go, nah, I'm going to just do it my way. Right. Mm-hmm. You're there to follow. You're on a team. You're following a team path. This is the reason why you are wearing that jersey, to follow the play. So for us early on, we took the idea of, let's stop franchising. It was growing so fast. Let's stop franchising. Get our training in order. Get better people. Get more talent. Because it's amazing how quickly you can sell franchises,
especially when you've got a brand that's successful and doing well and driving numbers to the bottom line. Everybody wants to throw money at it.
Yeah, and the truth is, I've never been that guy that got excited taking someone's check. It always felt like such a fiduciary responsibility. So on one hand, from a franchise perspective, it's stressful because someone hands you a check. Most people are excited. Hey, let's go. Here we grow again. And if there's anything I can't stand, is that word, here we grow again.
Yeah.
It should never, ever, ever be about you and your corporate world and team. It's got to be about the franchisee and franchisee-centric, because at the end of the day, you're your customer. Yeah. I may have some customers that may hear this. My main concern is not my customer in the franchise world. It's the franchisee.
Yeah. Well, and you talked about it. You alluded to it. When you guys are running direct restaurants, you got your 7 corporate restaurants. That ultimately is about the butt in the seat that's buying, buying food or whatever else. But selling franchises, you've really got to figure out how to help that guy be successful. Because at the end of the day, it's not valuable for you if he's not able to make money, if he's not able to fulfill the lifestyle that he wants when he buys that franchise, because it ultimately is not going to serve the purposes and how did you go about learning that? Where did that come from? Because I think I've heard and seen, I've experienced tons and tons of restaurants over the 25 years that I've been doing this, restaurant brands that franchise and they just want the royalty check, or they just want the logo on in this strip mall or this new spot. Talk to me about, it sounds like you made some pretty good decisions as it relates to making sure that you got your stuff together before you guys go sell too many franchises. Was that because you got, hit in the head too many times? Is that because it just wasn't working? Did you have some franchisees fail? And that's okay, because, to your point earlier, fail fast and move forward. Talk to me a little bit about where that decision came from and why you guys went down that path.
Yeah, no, it's a great one, because this is what I love about these questions is this is the thing that most people don't want to talk about. And I love talking about it. We grew a brand that was almost flawless, and then obviously made some bad choices with franchisees. And instead of us going and just figuring it out and hiding it, or not even hiding it, like just kind of keeping it on the books, mm-hmm. we were just like, you know what? We got to shut these down. We got to move on. We got to get great people. Mm-hmm. You can't, again, it goes back to a very simple philosophy. You got to have a culture and you got to have a way to make decisions. And it's eagle turkey, right? Mm-hmm. It's one or the other. If you're not an eagle, then you're probably taking everything else down. And it's funny, because looking back, it was one of the best decisions we ever made that everyone told us not to do.
Yep.
From attorneys to franchise consultants or whatever. Oh, don't close these stores. It's not a good idea. It's not good for your FDD. I don't really care about my FDD to make me look better, right? Yep. I want to make sure that franchisees are successful. If I'm going to hide that, there's 4 or 5 that don't really kick it, or they're not good franchisees, but I keep them on there, and I feel like such a responsibility from a human to not have that kind of stuff linger. Now, granted, if someone has 100 locations, they're not all going to be killers and successful. We know that. But earlier on, when we had a couple more units, our goal, and this was before COVID, our goal was to really sit down with folks and be like, we got to move this on for uh-huh. the better of the brand. And I got to tell you, when we went into COVID, one of the best, if we wouldn't have done that, it would have been a problem, because we did really, really, really well in COVID, considering we were in the breakfast segment, casual dining.
Which is interesting.
We just never would have, if we would have been with the same types of folks, it would have been a big problem. So we went into COVID pretty strong. We came out of COVID really strong. And again, that's without, what we would consider all the private equity money. I mean, we're whole, it's us. Mm-hmm. We don't have somebody pulling a string or being able to write checks or take away checks, whatever it may be. We knew we wanted to do what was best for the brand. And what was best for the brand was to make it stronger, make sure it had heavily funded, and have C-level executives that were just amazing. And yeah, it cost money, right?
Yep.
And that is what's really, we just started franchising again. We've been having calls even through COVID. We really want to open a store. We're like, when we have our team done, then we'll start selling again. And that's where we are now.
Uh-huh.
But we've been very, very good at saying no for a long time, because we also know what a yes looks like that's not going to work out. And so
as you talk about, you kind of pruned a little bit before COVID and it helped you. Was that really just because your acronym or your analogy of the turkey and the eagle is because you had some turkeys in the system that might have pulled your efforts away from running the restaurants that were already being successful? Is that why you think that it was the right move to have those decisions made, those oftentimes hard decisions?
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, 100%. But the main thing was, how is this affecting the franchisees that are actually out there performing?
Mm-hmm.
We got to take care of the people that A, they're performing, B, they've invested, C, they're listening, D, they're brand ambassadors. And you have that responsibility even times when things are not very popular.
Yeah.
It goes back to what I said early on with your problems don't age well.
Yeah.
Somebody that's not going to follow what you're doing or wants to close on a weekend or wants, you know, wants to serve chicken tikka masala or say, hey, we really want to bring in French fries. That's not what you signed up for.
That's not who you guys are. Yeah.
So, you know, we felt that we early on were able to, see that. And it made all the difference. And it's also why we're, you know, doing so well and why we're so confident that we can grow. I mean, look, we're looking to grow here on the Dallas. Yeah. We're speaking to people in Dallas now. I mean, you know, we would never have done that before. But when these are, you know, at least from the famous toastery side, the better breakfast side is very untapped, meaning the white space is just so great. Yeah, there's it's a handful of competitors. We all got our place, right? But it's not like the burger business or pizza business or the bagel business in New York, right? Everywhere you turn is burgers, pizza, bagels, right? Coffee shops. So there's just so much white space, and we just want to be the best at what we do. I'm not looking to compete. I don't look at what everybody else is doing and how am I going to beat them. We compete with ourselves and what we believe is best. What we took this knowing nothing about franchising and blew it into a multi-million dollar business. Now we've been doing this a long time. Now we're really good at it. And we did another brand. So it's like now is the time to, you know, kind of release all that information to folks so we can give that opportunity to those who've been asking for years.
I love that. And I want to dig into the franchising. But before I do that, I want you to talk a little bit about the brand. What does make it unique? You talk about Better Breakfast. I know there's other competitors in our business. We happen to be doing business with a few of, you know, kind of what I would consider that Better Breakfast brand. Talk to me a little. What does that mean to you guys? And what is one or two signature items that that you guys have or you know, a signature experience I might have if I walk in that I'm like, you know what? I got to have the famous toastery X or Y, or the experience is going to be this way or that way. For those that aren't familiar with the brand, as you guys start to expand, I know that our audience is going to continue to see you guys as you guys pop up in different places. What would you recommend as people engage that they can expect if they come patronize one of the restaurants?
Well, yeah, I'll give you one of my favorites. So my favorite dish is the avocado Benedict, and it's basically a full avocado split, basted, you know, whatever kind of egg you'd like. Pinto de gallo, cheese, and then your side. For me, that's my favorite. Which I can't get that anywhere right now. Mm-hmm. We've been doing that for a very, very long time, and we just, you know, it goes back to the fresh stuff of what we do. But when it comes to, you know, like a corned beef hash is known everywhere. Anybody that has a corned beef hash, like that is the best corned beef hash you've ever had.
But love it.
We roast it for hours. We put a lot of love into it. The differences, I mean, it's a very, very clear difference than every single competitor. Every single, if they're listening, call me if you want to challenge me in the kitchen. But we make it all fresh. We don't have little man, Mr. PE, with his little, you know, his $5,000 suit on, telling me I have to save 2% on my food cost. Well, here's the deal. If I have to go and get a cheaper bacon to make somebody else happy that's not sitting in that seat, then I'm not doing the job for my franchisee and for the patron. That's our commitment to everybody, that we're going to have, when you have bacon, it's going to be the best bacon you can get. When you get your turkey, it's not going to be nitrate filled from a box. When you get, you know, like I said before, our salad dressings, and the list goes on. We make it all that day for that day. It's like fresh food served fast, not fast food.
Yep.
And that is the differentiator. When folks see it and they compare, they're like, wow, okay, well, I didn't expect that. Even how we make every omelet in a pan. No one does that, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's even how fast we are, people can't do that. So we've been, that's kind of the double down. I mean, that's why I'm 1,000% confident opening up next to anyone. And even when they open up next to me,
mm-hmm.
we do not lose business. Our business actually goes up. So we have this weird thing that happens when some of the bigger ones, it's not many that have opened. It's becoming all like, oh, I hope they open up near us. Uh-huh. My business goes up. It is the weirdest thing I've ever experienced. You would think that it's going to stop your growth. You would think that it's going to, you know, hurt you if they're a bigger brand. It's been the opposite, because I think when you get a chance, when you get past the shiny penny, it comes down to what the food tastes like and what you're getting.
Yeah. And what your experience is. I talk about it often, is the guest experience is paramount to just about anything that's going on. And that starts with the food and the service, as you talked about.
Right. Not to say that any of the competitors are bad. I mean, I eat at a lot of them, right? I think a lot of them and their leadership is great. Mm-hmm. It's the decisions they choose to make.
Yep.
Like if they want to get things, or not my competitor, but really anybody, if they choose to get frozen hamburger patties, fine. But we make our own hamburgers. We've won best hamburger being a breakfast place, right?
So has that been hard from a supply chain perspective to you know, as you guys expand? Because one of the things that I've noticed, and I guess I'd love to get your opinion on this before we kind of talk about the franchising model, is a lot of times the food purveyors, you know, as you get outside of your core markets, you know, you guys have defined, this is the kind of bacon that we want, this is the kind of ham that we want, this is the kind of corned beef we want, you know, for our hash or whatnot. You guys have got a certain standard that you can get out of a warehouse and out of this supplier. But as you get farther away from the core, have you guys figured that out for the franchise community? And if so, what have you learned as it relates to it? And I'm not talking about the most, you know, the minute, you know, kind of current state of the market with supply chain, you know, long term.
I assume there's no, you know, COVID, assume all that stuff. Yeah, I mean, that's one of the main reasons why we've been very clear where we're going to grow. So, I mean, we can't be opening up stores in Utah, in Rhode Island, in California, when we're based, and most of our stores are in the Carolinas. So the trick is, and it's not just from the supply chain, because we work, you know, with Sysco, and they've been great to get us what we need when we've been to other places. We're in South Carolina, North Carolina, Virginia. And to get your, to go into a one-off store in the middle of nowhere, it's just not good for the brand.
Yep.
But it's also better to just grow within your market. A, your supply chain is always going to be easier than having to worry about, oh, can they get that specific bacon that we carry in Colorado?
Uh-huh.
Our interest is not really to grow all over the place, right? We're very specific. We want to work with all the connector states and out, you know, Tennessee, Carolinas, Florida, Georgia, Virginia. But then, of course, this Texas market, because we have, you know, we have, you know, kind of corporate presence there. There's also where Sysco's based. They're based out of Texas. But now, you know, I think it's for us, we were ahead of that pretty early on, and we've had a lot of luck with, you know, with the groups we've used. Again, if I go and open 14 stores and they're all in 14 different states, yeah, you have a problem then. That just becomes crazy.
Well, and I told you before we started recording, one of the clients that we did business with is Cheesecake Factory, and they had that problem, and they've had that problem as years have gone on. But their volume is so crazy that a lot of the suppliers are fine to do those things. But then when they went international, it was kind of interesting because they had to ship products to the Middle East and ship products to China from the U.S. to make sure that the product stayed the same. So it's just, wow. I'm always just intrigued to hear. I mean, I actually got a chance to go do the stuff in the Middle East, the first store over there for Cheesecake Factory. And I was like blown away with how much, I mean, they had to even change a lot of the recipes because they couldn't get certain products in the local market, and they couldn't, you know, chicken marsala, you couldn't cook with wine. So, you know, you're in a Muslim country. So, you know, you don't think about something like that. You and I would be like, you're not drinking the wine, but you got to put marsala wine in the chicken marsala to be able to make it. And it was just kind of interesting. So, sorry, it was just a little bit of a divergent train of thought that I figured I would ask. So talk to me about growth. You know, we've talked about franchising. Where are you guys at on that? How do people engage with the brand, not just as a consumer, but if they want to learn more about what you guys are doing, where you guys are at? You know, I'm excited to hear that you guys are doing, you know, the franchising. Selfishly, I'm excited to hear that you guys are coming my way hopefully soon, so I get to experience the brand. I've heard about you guys since you guys started, but hadn't had the privilege yet to go dine in one of your restaurants. And so selfishly, I'd love to learn what that looks like.
Yeah, I mean, so I mean, from the basic stuff, right? It's famoustoastery.com. You click on franchise, I'll let you know what we're doing. But, you know, we've gotten all those, you know, from just we've talked about the food and all, but, you know, we've been all the accolades. You know, we've won best breakfast in our era since we opened, and best breakfast in pretty much everywhere we go, from call it Charlotte, Lake Norman, Wake, you know, the Raleigh area, Virginia, because we're right outside of D.C. But, you know, the things like CNBC naming us one of the top franchises in America, you know, we have all that stuff, which is all nice. It's always good to have. But it's the what I'm most excited about for people coming on now is the robust team and people that we have. Mm-hmm. Top of the line industry vets, and also new people that just come with a different way of looking at things. So as we grow into these different areas, they can bring a Famous Toastery to their, you know, to their neighborhood. At the end of the day, if you're in, you want to be in the restaurant business, I mean, you got to want to serve, right?
Yep.
If everyone's going to call and say, well, how much money can I make and how quickly can I be out of the restaurant? This isn't for you. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what makes us a little different. Like, I don't want your money. We have enough corporate locations. We have enough other things going on. We want to create opportunities for people that really want to do this so that, you know, our best franchisees are the ones with these very, very big unit volumes that they know their customers. They bump into them at the baseball games, at the supermarket, and they have a passion to serve. Even if they're not going to work in the store, they have a passion to serve their employees to empower them to serve. But we're growing out, like I said, out of that Texas market, and pretty much in the Southeast. And because of like what we see is just an enormous amount of white space. I mean, our biggest competitor's got, you know, less than 400 units. Where if you're in the sub business, your competitor's got 50,000 units. And if you're in the burger business, they got 30,000 units. So for the better breakfast side, it's just a lot of space, especially in the growth markets, of which all of them are.
Yep.
Obviously Tennessee, but everything we mentioned, the Carolinas, Virginia,
Florida,
Texas, Florida. I mean, you're talking about, there's just super, super growth in those markets. And that's what we're here to do. We may be able to infill those and give people the opportunity to open up something that's just really kind of cool and special. I mean, look, if I didn't own this brand, I'd be eating at this brand, you know, 3 days a week. And that's the thing. Our average customer comes to comes 3 or 4 days a week because breakfast is habitual. That's the great thing about breakfast. It's not like a steak. You're not going to get that every night. And if you do, I think you got some other problems.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to be talking to your cardiologist, right?
This is like a coffee shop, because we also have, like, we serve lots of coffee, like the best Italian coffee you can find, right? So it's even, for some people, it's like their daily coffee shop. So it's really having folks understand that, we're here to help them in their entrepreneurial journey, and with the support that's bar none. And that's the thing that we've invested in. And I mean by that, I mean, look, we basically been telling everybody no up until recently, because now we have a robust team, you know, trainers, multiple marketing, development, etc. So we want to make sure that we go in super, super heavy, because I want to be able to look somebody in the face when they're going to give their hard-earned money to open up a Famous Toastery and say, we got your back, we'll support you, and here's our team. And ask your questions. At the end of the day, any franchisee going into any concept, they're going to pay that franchisor weekly.
Yep.
And they should get something in return.
Mm-hmm.
Period.
Yeah.
Right. And that's the way we look at it. It's a responsibility that you have as a franchisor to create the value for the franchisee. They're expecting that. Sometimes they lose the love and feeling, or things change, or COVID happens, but it's your job as a franchisor to make sure that you have that now and going forward, and have the plans to show it.
That's amazing. And I think, it's been fun to talk about the Better Breakfast segment, because I think across the board, consumers are demanding it. You know, and nothing against the huge national brands that do breakfast. They serve a certain customer, but it's amazing how many brands like yours and others, because you used to, I mean, in my opinion, you used to only be able to find that Better Breakfast as not like a chain. You'd have a one-off restaurant in the middle of, you know, the Bronx or whatever, that you'd be like, oh, I'm going to go to that place. But, you know, they could never figure out how to get beyond that. Right. It's awesome to watch that you guys have gotten to that place where you guys can expand that model in a way that that you can just hit more of the consumer. And I think more and more consumers are expecting that kind of food. They're expecting to know that they're getting healthy food that's good for them, that's not filled with a bunch of crap that that's going to make them sick later. So I love that. I love that you guys are on that journey. I love that that you got the opportunity to share a bit of your story. Is there anything that we missed that we should have been talking about today, Robert, before we sign off and say thank you to the guests?
I really appreciate your questions. And the direction you've taken this, and you've really done a great job with it, kind of digging into, the psyche of why, people do this, or why I do it, and where the opportunities are. I really appreciate your time.
Well, thank you. Thank you for jumping on. Guys, while you guys are checking out the famoustoastery.com, check on that that franchising link. If you haven't already done so, subscribe to the newsletter. You guys will get a once a month email that'll just let you guys know what we've been up to at Restaurant Technology. Guys, Robert, I can't say thank you enough for telling me a part of the story. I love hearing about it. And like I said, you'll have to let me know if you guys get into the Dallas Metroplex, or quite frankly, I'll be in the Carolinas sometime later this summer. I'll have to go check you guys out.
Awesome. And really, thank you very much for your time. I appreciate it, man.
Awesome. To our listeners, guys, make it a great day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.